RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Friday morning, political panel on RCR. I said yesterday it would be the old crew, and so it is, the old crew. Marty Gibson. Hey, Marty.
Me first. Oh, how you doing?
You weren't ready for that, were you?
No, I wasn't.
You thought it was going to be Olivia. Right?
Yeah, it's turning.
Because you're a gentleman. No, I think I've disproportionately welcomed Olivia first up.
It was very, very.
She sort of sets the tone.
Very sexist of you. I meant to raise that several times. You know, you got to now in this enlightened world of equity and all of that, you just got to go for the blokes on an even.
Well, actually, on my screen, I'm going from the bottom up.
You're going from the in that case, good morning, my lord and masters, my lords.
You can say good morning like that any time. Great to see you, Olivia. Thanks for coming back.
Yeah, you're welcome.
The truth is, though, Olivia's got bigger balls than most men.
Oh, thanks, Cam.
Thank you. Thank you, Cam. All right, and, I don't really need to introduce you, do I, really?
No. It's almost like we've been smoking the bong or shrooms. We're all so gleeful and happy.
Well, I'm just happy it's the end of the week. And World War III hasn't broken out. The Daily Telegraph is reporting things, and we had, depending on the way you think, a win or not so much of a win or a pause at the World Health.
Yep.
I've got lamb shanks in the slow cooker.
I don't think they are continuing to pause, though, are they?
No, they won't. They'll carry on. They'll just keep pushing on, but the reckoning is coming in November when the biggest country that influences where everybody else goes, the United States, is going to get a change of government. And
right. Yeah.
He's not going to go into the WHO.
What about our slimy little officials? Do you see them talking? You know who I'm talking about.
Yes, they're very slimy.
Why do they always look like that?
Because they're lizard people.
Too much soy.
Too much David Icke.
They're lower than a snake's belly, most of them.
They don't make us look good, I got to say. Anyway.
Bureaucrats do have a look, though. You're right. They really do.
It's a lack of vitamin D because they sit inside in brown cardigans all day.
Ashley reminds me of Radar out of MASH.
Oh, yeah.
And that's being kind.
I was going to say that's an insult to Radar because he was quite cute.
And then there was a certain guy in the, in Germany in the 30s who kind of looked like that, wore glasses like that.
Hmm.
There were a few that looked like that in Germany.
mild mannered.
Yeah. Snappy dresses.
Yeah.
Eyes vicious, wide open.
Vicious on the inside.
Oh, yeah. All right, let's get into it. The investigations into Te Pāti Māori and John Tamaheri's fiefdom, Cam. That's the headline from Bryce Edwards' piece, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, just put this in perspective. Bryce Edwards, a sneaker-wearing lovey from the left, is hooking into these guys. Something must be pretty rancid. I mean, I used a headline that it's dodgier than a late-night kebab. And I added to that and said it's dodgier than a late-night kebab that was discarded a week ago in favour of a couple of Lion Browns.
By the way, I had late-night kebabs in K Road for 5 years in a row. I never had a problem, just saying.
Well, I'm an aficionado of the dodgy kebab. I enjoy that type of cooking, and I must have a cast iron constitution because I've never got sick from that, but I can't say the same for KFC, which is ironically what we should be looking at with all the shenanigans and the, dare I say it, corruption that's gone on in Tamaki Makaurau electorate, particularly around the Manurewa Marae polling booth, which for some reason the Electoral Commission in their great wisdom thought it'd be a fantastic idea to have a polling booth at a marae, and a marae that the CEO of that marae was also a candidate for Te Pāti Māori. And you only have to look at the spreadsheet that the Electoral Commission has on their website, on the election results website, to see the glaring inconsistency. I mean, if you're going to cheat in an election, you'd do it less obviously, I would have thought. The numbers are staggering. Like, David Farah put it on his website. He actually looked at the other polling booths that are in a similar area. And if you look at the other polling booths around that area, the vote goes overwhelmingly in favour of Labour, of the Labour candidate, Pene Henare. But Manurewa Marae is the exact reverse of that.
So it stands out.
Like it stands out. And there's another Marae too, which is in the electorate that Kelvin Davis, see, I nearly forgot his name, he's so forgettable. Kelvin Davis was the MP and lost that seat to Party Māori. There's another Marae that had a polling booth, similar results there. So the Electoral Commission plus all the various agencies that are involved in this, because the accusations are is they took census data that people handed in their census forms at the Manurewa Marae. They were then photocopied and then entered into a database that was controlled by the Waipara Trust. And then that is then passed on to the Māori Party. That's the allegations. It's not just from one whistleblower. It's from several whistleblowers. I understand there's also whistleblowers from inside Stats New Zealand and inside the Ministry of Health, because vaccine data and vaccine information was also passed as part of this. There's the allegations. They've got to be investigated. Of course, the Māori Party, in typical form, are either saying nothing or, claiming that that these allegations have no veracity.
But well, no. Here's what I'm thinking. Sorry to jump in. But this whole thing that we were talking about only days ago about, you know, these videos and everything and all these strident comments from certain people, do you think there's any confluence of timing there? Trying to get ahead of something? I don't know.
Yeah, it's hard to know. It's seriously wonky, though, the stats that are showing there. I mean, this is empirical data that draws your attention to something not being right. And there's allegations of illegal treating. That is a crime under the Electoral Act. You're not allowed to treat, which is to provide food or, on the basis that if you vote, goodies, you'll get this. Yeah, and there was apparently $100 food vouchers that were handed out. Pretty hard to say, well, we're just giving them coffee and pikelets as they're
voted.
Why
would you ever put those polling places in a marae? It's obvious that...
Well, this comes back to the rant that old Waititi had on the steps talking about the Pākehā budget and the Pākehā parliament. You know, it's a form where if they get caught cheating by doing that, that's our monarchy.
It's the Pākehā system. It's the Pākehā system that they've decided to use against them.
Yeah. And maybe that stuff, you know, as you say, Paul, you might have a point. Maybe it's getting ahead of getting a bit of a legal kicking just to say, you know, well, that's just us at war with the system.
You can say, see, we told you. See, they're doing it again.
They're out to get us. In Bryce Edwards' article, there was a great link to that. Did you read the Substack, Punishingly High Mourner?
Yeah.
The darkness of the Tamihere fiefdom. That was an interesting...
Wasn't that a great article, though? I mean, this is somebody who's been deep inside both Waipara Trust and the Māori Party, who has decided to spill his guts over the fiefdom that he says is the John Tamihere is controlling. It's John Tamihere's way or the highway. And then when you look at some of the statements that John Tamihere's made, they're just appalling, the things that he's said and the things that he's done.
We've been talking about the cluster B personality disorders in the midst of all this, and you know, that's pretty in line with that. Was talking about, I mean, he said Saul Goodman and Don Draper are complex anti-heroes. John Tamihere is not complex. There are no layers. He's pure id, simple aggression. In my opinion, John Tamihere is what would happen if Colonel Kurtz from Apocalypse Now was taken out of the context of the Vietnam War and dropped into a well-respected indigenous NGO. It takes another few, he said, I choose to look for the good in people, but in John I could find none.
It was brutal. It was a brilliantly written. And, you know, somebody, Paul, should talk to our producers and get this guy on to talk to.
For sure.
Yeah, it just amazing stuff that was written there. And you're sitting there thinking, wow, okay, you either know more or have got more when you read it. It's just astonishing.
He is an almost cartoonishly cruel and hateful person.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's next level.
Yeah, well, I mean, the tragedy is that you've got guys like him, guys like Waititi, representing Māori in the minds of many non-Māori people and doing them a tremendous disservice in the process, because Māori aren't like that. But empire builders with narcissistic personality disorders are.
But you can feel the ratchet of tension kind of clicking here.
Yeah.
This kind of strikes me as the Labour Party exacting utu for losing all these seats. I mean, let's face it, Maori electorates, with the sole exception of the Maori Party and New Zealand First in various different periods of time, has been controlled by the Labour Party and the Ratana Church. And what this looks like is they've finally managed to shake a few people loose. And you know, the other person who's digging deep into this is Brian Tamaki as well. So this isn't as Rauri Waititi and John Tamahiri will no doubt portray it as Whitey getting even. These are actually Maori that are levelling these allegations against John Tamahiri and against the Waiparara Trust and the Maori Party. These are Maori people that are speaking out. And for them to do that, that's an intense frustration at what's gone on. But I do sniff the you know, the heavy hand of the Labour Party weighting the scales in this one.
Mm. Te Pāti Māori photocopying census forms and gathering personal details for election interference, because that's what it was, right?
Yeah.
Allegedly. It sounds about right. And the context, remember, is that we had, you know, it has to be said that we had 6 years of Ardern, and three of them where she ended up overturning our Bill of Rights and putting the country into mass house arrest. An example of our already established laws meaning nothing anymore. Nothing. Mm. And that was the great example of the rules not applying to her. And that was a great example of everything being turned upside down on its head and breaking every norm in this country's tradition, and her not being held accountable for it. Her contempt for the people of this country was made evident when she ran her 2020 campaign on a single issue, you know, keeping you safe from COVID via illegal lockdowns. So it doesn't surprise me that after that time, radical Maori leadership did likewise, as in bent the rules flagrantly, flouted them, actually, and because she dropped the standard unflinchingly and set really bad precedents for parties on the left. And of course, she used the Public Journalism Fund to make sure the media were groomed into never saying a word against any Maori issue. So hence the media are still completely silent regarding this travesty of election interference.
You have to admire
No other party would get that immune from criticism.
Yeah, true, but you have to admire Andrea Vance, who maybe it's her News of the World, you know, background, has decided to be the person that gets us out there. And then you've got Philip Crump. But Andrea Vance in the Post, credit where credit's due, ironically, she won the Canon Media Award Best Journalist the same year that I won the Best Blog Award. She's been...
We really needed to know that, but okay.
Well, you know...
you were in good company, weren't you, Ken?
I haven't won anything.
I generally don't, you know, respect a lot of what Andrea Vance has done, but I do in this case.
Would that be part of the Labour Party connection there? Get it out there.
Oh, could be. I think she's got closer connections to Peter Dunn, though.
Well, he's had a few things to say, too. I see Brian Tamaki was commenting on something he said on Newstalk ZB.
But here's the thing, right? We had the Serious Fraud Office descend on New Zealand First, the Labour Party and the National Party. They didn't get a single conviction out of all of that because, like Olivia says, they tried to turn the law inside out and upside down and apply it. And, of course, once it went to the Court of Appeal, everything was thrown out. But this is a fairly clear-cut case. And the Electoral Act 1993 in Section 216 covers this very easily. There's also no limitations. Like, if I could talk to Pene Henare, I'd say there's no opportunity for him to do an electoral petition because 3 months has passed since the election. So that's sort of a dead end for that. But you could stand up a Section 216 in the Electoral Act, which covers bribery. And it says there, every person commits the offence of bribery who directly or indirectly by himself or herself or by any other person on his or her behalf, A, gives any money or procures any office to or for any voter. And it carries on and lists several things. Most of those are the allegations with which the Maori Party stands accused.
That was written in a very gendered way.
Yeah, it was 1993. We actually only had two sexes back then. Yeah, but we've still got two sexes, but there's a whole bunch of deluded people who think otherwise.
You can go to the Andrea Vance article and contrast it with that section of the Act that you just read out. The Marae staffed a dedicated desk for visitors to fill out the enrollment form. The ex-employee said the vocab they were told to use was basically sign this or you can't get that. They would say tick that box to change roles and then we can give you your voucher.
Your voucher. Wow. For your care pack.
And two... 216, part 2, subsection C, makes any gift or procurement as aforesaid to or for any person in order to induce that person to procure or endeavour to procure the return of any person or candidates at the election or the vote of any voter. It's fairly clear cut.
That's very clear cut.
So, we've got Stats New Zealand who are saying, oh, we haven't had any complaints, but we're looking into it. Well, that's weak. Who else is weak? Christopher Hipkins was weak. He said, I think this is a bit whiffy, I'm a bit concerned about this. That's why I suspect the Labour Party's involved in this. He's soft-soaping it so it doesn't look like it's him or his guys. And then you've got Christopher Luxon who goes, oh, yes, perhaps there should be an inquiry. Well, mate, you're the Prime Minister. You're the person who can decide whether there's an inquiry or not, but he's only talking about maybe there should be one. It's vacillation of immense proportions.
I want to get on to Fauci in just a moment, but last question from me on this. Do we need to look at our electoral system, the way we run it? Because it seems to me that it's a bit loose.
Well, I've said this for years, Paul. If you think back to Helen Clark and the card that they issued where they basically stole taxpayers' money to produce election materials when they were rumbled, ironically it was by bloggers at the time, they then immediately sought to wash their hands of it by passing retrospective legislation and made what was illegal and was found by the Auditor General, I believe, to be illegal. They made it legal again. So it goes back a long way.
Do you think the 2020 election was legit?
We've had this one, haven't we, a few times.
To actually cheat requires a significant amount of effort. There's so many people that are involved in the count. There's so many people from different parties that are involved in the count. The only way that you could do it, ironically, is the way that it appears the Maori Party have done it, where you have a bunch of people in there who are all part of the process. There wouldn't have been any National Party or scrutineers at that polling booth. I imagine there was zero. I don't think there would have been any New Zealand First scrutineers there. There would only have been Labour Party scrutineers if there was any. In 2020, it was obvious they were going to lose, so there would have been a short on volunteers and people to volunteer to spend their day sitting. If you've ever done it, it's really boring. You just sit there and watch people come in and vote and then you participate in watching the count. So to do it, you'd have to have a mechanism, a stratagem, a device, kind of like what is being accused here.
And the CIA screwing the scrum with the social media as well. And I think that pretty much.
Well, they didn't do that.
I remember I got booted off Twitter about 3 months before the 2020 election, and it felt pretty creepy. I hadn't really done anything wrong.
It's all on you, Marty.
Well, Michael Bassett said that he thought it was fishy.
Well, there you go. All right. He made it up. The 6 foot social distancing rule, the masking of kids, the little midget made it up.
He made everything up. The upshot of that hearing from the House Oversight Subcommittee into Dr. Fauci, Mr. Fauci, as Marjorie Taylor Greene kept calling
him. You're not a doctor.
Yeah. The upshot was that everyone around Fauci was responsible for hiding information and responsible for preventing FOIA requests. They were deleting emails. They were giving specific instructions through email on how to communicate without the media or any congressional investigators ever finding out about it. Basically, Fauci said throughout that hearing, all of that was nothing to do with me. He admitted that Daszak and David Morans and Peter Daszak had violated the rules of certain aspects of policy, but he kept distancing himself. So, you know, they're just throwing, they're going to throw each other under the bus.
But that was a lie too, Olivia, because they've got email trails where Fauci's saying we need to communicate on Gmail. So yeah. So that was a lie.
Yeah, you know? He's very good at lying.
Peter His lips move.
Yeah, Peter Daszak of Eco Health Alliance, who is also a grantee, of course, of the money from NIAID, which Fauci was director of, and David Morans, who was Fauci's senior advisor throughout the whole COVID pandemic. Morans said he knew how to make emails disappear if his communications were requested under FOIA, according to the subcommittee. Morans also communicated by email to Peter Daszak and that Fauci was trying to protect him. And given the fact that Daszak was more than 2 years late with a required progress report, and he conducted an experiment in a novel virus showing excess growth and then failed to report that experiment, and Daszak was protecting the Wuhan lab and not sharing its lab notebooks with the NIAID. So he failed to disclose obvious conflicts of interest as well. So Comer asked Fauci, why were you trying to protect Dr. Daszak and EcoHealth Alliance? And Fauci answered, I repeat on the record, I had not tried to protect Dr. Daszak. He then made excuses that he didn't know about the compliance breaches that I just mentioned. And yet Daszak was a grantee, and it was through that mechanism that the gain of function research was done in the Wuhan lab.
So he didn't look at the grants either, didn't he, as well?
No, he didn't look at the grants. I mean, I just don't believe that. That's nonsense. Marjorie Taylor Greene grilled Fauci so hard in the hearings that she held up photos of the tortured beagle pups that he used in lab experiments. And he didn't deny them notice. He just said, what have dogs got to do with the COVID response?
And there's a New York accent,
She should have held up pictures of the dead black and Hispanic orphans that he conducted experiments on, or the dead pregnant women in Africa.
Yeah, that
we've got to make sure we don't memory hole that video clip of Simon Armstrong, is it? Sorry, what's the...
The guy sitting behind. The guy sitting... Is that what you're talking about?
No. The New Zealand reporter who interviewed him on The Nation in this gushing, fawning way.
Oh, Simon Shepherd.
Simon Shepherd, sorry.
Mm. Oh, yeah, but the funny thing about these hearings, though, is there was a guy there, a youngish guy, who's actually spent 2 years in jail for one of these fake January 6th convictions. He was sitting directly behind Fauci.
Mm.
When Fauci was getting all upset about things, he'd be making sad faces and then pretending that he had tears coming down his face and just mocking Fauci the whole time. I think he was the standout feature of those.
But on the other side of him, behind Fauci, was Ivan Raiklin, who, of course, I don't know if you know who he is, but he's the ex, I think he's an ex Green Beret, that's absolutely got a mission to bring these people to account. And he is a very, very serious man. And Fauci is on his, what is it he calls his hit list, not a murder hit list, but on a getcha by law hit list. And he's quite close to Elon Musk as well, Ivan Raiklin. So that's who I was noticing. But Marjorie Taylor Greene pointed out that Fauci's version of science was immoral and disgusting, as she said. And after more photos on display with pictures of kids playing musical instruments at school and plastic tents to keep the 6 feet distancing rule and the masking of children, and even a photo during lockdown where Fauci is sitting watching a ball game with two other people and nobody else in the bleachers with his mask pulled down as he shares a big laugh. And Marjorie observed the utter hypocrisy of this photo and said to Fauci, "Yet children are put in plastic bubbles because of your science, your repulsive, evil science." She was just wonderful, and ended up saying that, you know, that committee should be referring him for criminal prosecution for crimes against humanity, and told him that he belonged in prison. But one of the absolute standout lines of questioning came from Congressman Rich McCormick of Georgia, who was a doctor and was censored and had his medical license threatened because he disagreed with bureaucrats while he was on the front line treating people with COVID right through the pandemic. And he played a voice recording of Fauci talking to someone on the phone about mandating vaccines, because Fauci said it's been proven that when you make it difficult for people in their lives, they lose their ideological bullshit and they get vaccinated. So if we have that clip, that'd be a great one to play. McCormick asked Fauci, "Are all objections to the COVID vaccines ideological bullshit, Dr. Fauci?" And Fauci lamely answered, "That's not what I was referring to," when he clearly was. He's just such a good liar. Whether Fauci ends up going to prison or not, I think he will go down in history as the Dr. Evil who promoted junk science and got a whole nation to go along with it. I really think that's his fate, Dr. Junk Science. I mean, he lied about transmission, he lied about masks, he lied about the vaccines, and he lied about the origins of COVID.
But he also, in his testimony, blamed free speech for challenges in about it, right? He said, "This is ridiculous. These people were spreading things that weren't true, were like 6 feet masks, 6 feet different, you know, distances between people and masking."
Yeah, but notice he tried to say that he tried to bring up the bleach lie, you know, about Trump. Trump never told anybody to inject bleach into their systems. That was an absolute lie.
Oh, they loved it when he said that.
Oh, they did. And that's what he was referring to. But, you know, that he was, you know, trying to counteract crazy stuff said by the president. And it's just nonsense.
That actually came from something Dr. McCullough said, which was that COVID incubates for a fair while in the nose. And if you have a weak solution of sodium hypochlorite, I think, used as a nasal spray, you can greatly reduce the chance of infection.
But yeah, and remember, we drink chlorine all the time in our water.
But this is the thing with Trump, right? He this is how it would have happened. Because remember the one who said, "Oh, how can we inject sunlight into people?" Right? Because so Trump likes to crunch things down to a simple way of explaining things. So somebody would have said, "Oh, you know, President, if we dispense vitamin D3," and he would have gone, "Well, what's vitamin D3?" And they would have said, "Oh, it's the that's what's produced in the body when you're out in the sun and you get a lot of sunlight, you get vitamin D3, and people with strong levels of vitamin D3 are not susceptible to COVID." And they went, "Oh, right, so we've got to find a way that we can get that sunlight into people." And then, of course, that gets leaked to the media, and that's exactly what would have happened with the bleach thing. They would have said, what's that sodium stuff? Well, it's like a bleach, Mr. President. You know, but very weak, but it's like a bleach. Right, okay, and then he would have said something, and all of a sudden it's his idea.
And everyone thinks
idea. Janola. Yeah.
Yeah, but really, miracle, what's that stuff, MMS? Miracle mineral solution is a form of a bleach that's really good for the body, but notice they banned that like they did ivermectin. In fact, the guy that was selling it here has gone to prison.
You mentioned he was a good liar. The way he answers is quite interesting. He has a sort of like a way of answering, which is sort of deflecting in a way. And it does, it kind of works for him, even in the hot situations.
And indignant.
Yeah,
he's
yeah.
Indignant.
Oh, yeah. But after the hearing, Speaker Comer said to the press, I think the American people saw the slick talker who fooled right. America, who's probably done more harm to public education. He did more harm to our national debt and to our economy than any other single human being in my lifetime. And I think
well,
that's true.
You look at the statistics that are coming out from around the world where lockdowns were used, the education statistics that are coming out, the surge in untreated cancers and all of those sorts of things. As Olivia said in the opening segment, they turned the law inside out, upside down, everywhere around the world and locked up healthy people. And the consequences of that are going to be felt for decades.
Absolutely. Look what they've just done to Trump. I mean, that's just lawfare that's upside down.
Yeah, but in a way it has an upside too for Trump.
The backfire.
I'm sure he gets elected.
I mean, I wouldn't, on that basis, go through with this because it's going to work for the guy so well. Like he said, I don't even mind being in prison. Of course not. Best thing you could ever have is him doing the perp walk or whatever with the orange jumpsuit on and the handcuffs. Yep. He'd go through the roof.
Yeah. People love a battler.
They love a martyr as
well. They don't seem to get that.
Mm. Did you hear, I don't know if you've noticed, but the Biden-Harris ticket are not campaigning. They are not campaigning.
Point.
Yeah, and there was that guy that was on Twitter the other day that said he drove from L.A. down to Houston, Texas, and he said he did not see a single bumper sticker,
a
single flag. Yeah, but, I mean, they are not campaigning, and we saw that in 2020.
Well,
when
they must
Joe
think they've got it,
in his
Olivia.
Basement. They do. They think they've got it. So what the hell are they planning that they're so confident that they don't even have to campaign?
Well,
that worries me.
If they're looking
deeply
at the polls the same way that I'm looking at the polls and people like Nate Silver are looking at the polls, and we discussed this last night on my show, Olivia, about what's going on, the numbers are not falling for the Democrats. Right? They are watching a surge in not only in Trump in the polls but also in the fundraising. I mean, he raised in 24 hours $90 million immediately after the conviction.
I think it was $300 million, Cam, if you add up all the organizations. It was $300 million.
Now, you put that in perspective. In 2020, Trump spent about $850 million for his campaign. So, right? So in 24 hours, Trump and affiliates have raised a third of what they spent last election.
Did you hear, my favorite senator, I adore John Kennedy of Louisiana.
Yeah, great turn of phrase.
He said that Biden was in trouble and his polling is right up there with fungal infections.
All right. So before we go off this, Olivia, you wanted to hear that clip. Just quickly tell us who we're going to hear and kind of what he's going to say again.
It's Anthony Fauci speaking on the phone to, I'm not sure who he's actually speaking to, but it was him talking about pressuring people to get vaccinated in America.
Once people feel empowered and protected legally, you are going to have schools, universities, and colleges are going to say, you want to come to this college, buddy? You're going to get vaccinated. Lady, you're going to get vaccinated.
Yeah.
Big corporations like Amazon and Facebook and all of those others are going to say, you want to work for us? You get vaccinated. And it's been proven that when you make it difficult for people in their lives, they lose their ideological bullshit and they get vaccinated.
Wow. There it is. On the phone. A perfect call. All right. We don't want to run out of time. Probably got only time for one more issue. Oh, by the way, we have an equivalent of Fauci. Let's never forget that. Do you want to do the crime in Auckland?
Well, I'm interested in that because I thought it's interesting that speaking of people hanging around, Andrew Costa's still hanging around.
Like a bad, like a fart in an elevator.
Yeah, he and Police Minister Mark Mitchell say crime in Auckland CBD is falling and they are untying officers' hands to control the streets.
What
again.
Do you mean untying?
Well, it's just interesting when you, this is what Mark Mitchell said, we are untying their hands from behind their back and giving them new powers saying that we are backing them and behind them, getting out there, reasserting yourselves, and showing that the police control the streets and not gangs or border
control those rainbow crossings.
Take the opposite of that. That's what Costa presided over. Police having their hands tied behind their back. And the reason this interested me so much was I had an interesting chat recently with a retired senior policeman who spoke of the scourge that Cuddles Costa has been to law and order in New Zealand. He was saying that these bizarre rules had come down on high from on high that demanded that any call they had about an argument between a man and a woman had to be attended with a squad car. And he said how that arbitrary distraction, along with the Cuddles' limp-wristed approach to gangs, meant, you know, the gangs grew like weeds. And he was saying about the gang wars in West Auckland, which have been in the paper as well lately, said they were deliberately unreported as houses were being shot up and torched with children inside. And he also talked about the huge volume of weapons held by gangs, and how Labor had basically given Cuddles Costa that 5-year term when it's conventionally a 3-year one. So we're stuck with him for another 18 months.
No, we're not. We're not stuck with him for that.
You drop kick him tomorrow if they're
ready. This is the thing that I said when the new government came in, they should have lined up all of the bosses of the civil servants, the police, every government department should have been called, had a meeting in, I don't know, Michael Fowler Centre, if it's still standing, or, you know, something like
Saddam
that.
Like Saddam Hussein did back in the day.
But call them all in and then say, right, now you're all sitting here, right, everyone paying attention, right, now I'd like to see Mr. Costa up on the stage, I'd like to see this person on stage, that person on stage, right, thank you, here's your notices. You're gone. Could you leave through that side door? Thanks. Don't come back. Don't let the door hit you.
Yeah, why doesn't
ass.
That happen?
I don't know. Because if they'd done that, then they're quite, when they're all quieted down from the little hubbub that, oh my God, they fired someone so publicly, then you stand up and you say, right, have you got the message?
Well, you also said on that same show that because we've got a former dog handler in charge, nothing like that's likely to happen.
Well, I mean, this is the thing. I like Mark Mitchell. I mean, I helped get him elected. But he used to be a dog handler. He knows how to deal with gangs. He was a dog handler in Wairoa. Now, that's your neck of the woods, Marty. You know, yeah. Wairoa is not that flash, is it? And right. I said to him, you know, when I was giving him speech training and stuff like that, I said, all right, tell those stories about. And he said, well, like what? I said, well, the one you told me about the gang member who ran into an abandoned...
What do you mean, like, what?
Well, that's the thing, right?
What?
So he told me the story about how this gang member ran into an abandoned building, you know, I don't know, an old dairy factory or something like that, and he knew there's no way out of there. So Mark sat down on a brick wall and lit up a cigarette, and then he called out to, you know, if you don't come out in the next 10 minutes, I'm letting the dog in. The guy came out.
Well, the guy I was talking to was talking about that as well. He said, you know, this guy came at me with canoes under his arms, and I just punched him in the face. And he was crying in the back of a squad car. And I was saying, shut up. What are you doing? You're a tough gang guy. And he and other men like him, who you need to combat those sort of bullies and thugs, have all been edged out of the police force by this approach that they've taken over the past 6 years.
You can't have a police commissioner who's not effective in deploying his force.
Well, we've got one.
But that can't stand. I mean, he's gone tomorrow, surely.
But you know what the police call him? I mean, when you actually talk to police
Cuddles,
on the thing, no, they don't call him Cuddles. They call him the Lantern. He's extremely bright, but has to be carried.
Oh, okay. We'd never have got that. Oh, maybe I could have worked that out.
Right? That's what they call them. The police have got nicknames.
All these suboptimal people. They're everywhere.
They're cucks, actually.
Oh, dear. Anything more to say about that, Marty?
No, it really struck me, because I've known a few police, ex-policemen like that, and you do need a certain type of approach to deal with gangs, and it's not necessarily tasteful, but gangs aren't tasteful, and we've got to confront what they're doing to our country.
Don't you want a police commissioner who fronts up, calls all the gangs together, all right, we'll pay for it, you're going to be here, and gets up, sort of does a Trump. We can work together, otherwise I'm going to nuke you.
Well, there's also that reality that governments love anything that makes people demand less freedom and more government, and gangs are one of those things, which is why they're never effectively dealt with. And when people are saying, oh, you know, the police have got to have the right to just burst into people's houses and confiscate weapons.
I mean, I've had run-ins with the police where they've turned up and tried to do things that were outside of the law, and they get all uppity when you say to them, no, I'm sorry, go away, you need to follow the law. They go, oh, come on, mate. Yeah, the police are not your friend. If you're a firearms owner, you know this, right? That you are treated worse than the worst gang members.
Well, look at Rachel Stewart.
Yeah. Well, what happened to her, it very closely echoed what happened to me.
Yeah. The amount of weapons that were given up by one of the gangs to go easy at sentencing on one of their senior members, he said, was just astonishing. And they were handing in the stuff that they didn't really want. Hand grenades.
What?
Yeah.
Well, the trouble with hand grenades is you can get yourself with those.
Yeah.
Well, no, you just don't throw it far enough and you cop it as well.
Got to be trained.
They're heavy, right? Like, if you can think of a cricket ball and triple the weight of that, right. And try and biff that, and you want to get it at least 30 meters away from you.
How much? 13?
30.
Man, that's almost 100 feet.
You need to biff it a long way, right?
I couldn't do that.
You have to have seen a grenade go off to see what it does, right?
Right.
They're not what you see in the movies. They're far worse than that.
It's worse than that.
Yeah.
All right. I think we're up against the time. So it's been a good chat. I want to thank, I'm going to go from the bottom up again, Marty Gibson in the panel room on the panel.
All right. Thanks for having me. Good time.
Yeah. Olivia, thank you.
You're welcome.
And Cam, thank you again.
You're welcome, Paul. Thanks, everybody.
Right now, free speech is under heavy attack in New Zealand and overseas, with governments constantly devising new ways to enforce censorship. To make sure you never miss the critical news and breaking stories you rely on, join the RCR mailing list today. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.